have led up to that, as I have indicated. As I said, if you don't have a copy of the program, please do indicate it was made available to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. It's good to be finally here with you, and thank you for the invitation to come and observe. I have sitting on my right hand an officer who has been very kindly donated to us by the Auditor General, because looking at our specific situation, we discovered that we needed a compliance officer to assist the Minister to ensure that there is compliance with the laws from the Defence Force and the Secretariat, and we have been very kindly given this gentleman, who will be very well known to you. He will introduce himself. He will be appointed by us through the Public Service Minister for the period of a year to assist my office. Thank you. Would you like to introduce yourself,
right,
Mr. Fanning?
No, maybe let's do it like this, Comrade Minister. I'll start this way. From the secretary, and then everybody else can then introduce themselves.
Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much, the Minister, the Honorable Chairperson, the Honorable Members of the SCOPA. My name is Mpumi Mbofu. I am the Secretary for Defense. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, and Honorable Members. Honorable Minister, my name is Mziwonge Labantu. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of the Department of Defense.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, members of the committee. Honorable Minister, I'm Major General Ngonyane, Chief of Logistics. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable Minister, Secretary for Defense, members of SCOPA, I'm Major General Ngolisi Petane, Inspector General of the Department of Defense. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, Honorable Members of SCOPA, I am Major General Van Sachwai, Chief Director of Operations.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, and Honorable Members, thank you. My name is Wally van Yedden. I'm sitting on the other side of the committee.
The same around, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members of Parliament, Honorable Minister, my name is Mfano Kona Sajwayo. I work with the Chief Account and with the Chief Compliance Office.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and Honorable Minister, my name is Brigadier General Tebo Horakau. I'm the military secretary in the minister's office.
Thank you very much. Can we start this side?
Honorable Chair, honorable members of parliament, honorable minister, honorable SecDef, I am Major General Impantem Simang, Chief Director, Air Policy and Plan in the Southern Air Force.
Honorable Chair, honorable minister, and honorable members, my name is Tom Skamede. I'm the Chief Policy, Strategy and Planning.
Honorable Chair, honorable minister, and honorable members, I'm Dr. Mary Ledwaba. I'm the Chief Director, Human Strategy and Policy in the Department of Defense.
Honorable Chair, honorable minister, members of COPA, the Secretary for Defense, I'm Major General Lefeni Make, Chief of Support in the Office of the Surgeon General.
Good morning, Comrade Chair, Honorable Minister and Honorable Members. I am Major General Edwin Ucholeka. I'm Chief Director, Defense Acquisition Management, and also Acting Chief Defense Material. Thank you.
Okay. So the name is Rear Admiral Pillay. I'm Director of Maritime Plan, South African Navy, representing Vice Admiral Medima, Chief of the South African Navy.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, Honorable Members, I'm Brigadier General Eddie Drost. I'm Director of Army Strategy.
Thank you very much. National Treasury.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Philip from Skolkirk, National Treasury.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Star Kafu, National Treasury.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Emmanuel Masha, Minister of Finance, Parliamentary Office.
Thank you very much. can we go over to the Auditor General's office?
Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, Secretary for Defense, I'm Barry Wheeler, Corporate Executive Audit in the Auditor General's office.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, Musa Hlongwa, Business Executive, Auditor General.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, Honorable Members, I'm Stanton, Senior Manager, IG Office.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, Members, I'm Tienz Elof, Senior Manager, Audit of Defense.
Right. Very much. Can we go to members of parliament? Can you comrade introduce yourself?
First and good morning, Minister. Naveen Singh, member of SCOPA.
David Mania, alternate member of SCOPA.
Pretorius, lid van Skoor.
Patrick Saal, member of SCOPA ANC.
Morning, Roy Ainsley, member of SCOPA.
Good morning, Tabela Chilwane, member of SCOPA.
I'm Mukabe Mazia, a member of the Defense and Joint Defense.
Stan Jimele, Chairperson, Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans.
Morning, Faith Mutambi, member of SCOPA.
Morning, Sarah Mayana, member of SCOPA.
Mela Mbakhaiso, Kinante Wale Matlandi, Ketokulua Committee.
Torel, Lamrawa Terejane, Malelokuwa Committee.
Right, thank you very much. I am Comrade Temba Goti. I chair this committee. Comrade Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, welcome. Honorable Mani, switch off that mic.
I apologize.
All right. Right. Well, Comrade Ministers, I'll say we're happy to have you and the department here to go through some of the issues that the committee will only be too happy to get clarifications on, so that when we report to Parliament, we at least have had the benefit of this interaction. All is well that ends well. It might have been that they were tried on several occasions to have this engagement without success, but it does not take away from the substance of the engagement, which is a process of exchange of information in terms of what it is the department is doing and what it is that the department has done. Before I hand over to comrades, just to indicate, Comrade Minister, I think at the end we'll afford you some 5 minutes. As the proceedings continue, you can note down issues to which you may want to respond at the end, and or if there are issues discussed here that we feel we may need a political response, you may note them down, then we'll give you the opportunity at the end. Comrade Chair, the Portfolio Committee will also give you some time just before the Minister to also make some input in case there are issues you would want to talk to. Otherwise, for defense, we're happy to see you in your other, in your new life. The last time we met you in your other life, now you are here in your new life. We're happy to see you. We're happy to have you here. we were quite aware that together with the CFO, you came in at the end or the beginning of the financial year, around April last year. So you came in during reporting time. And of course, a lot of the stuff that is reported here, you had to interact with it. To try and get it right. I'm aware that at the initial submission, there were 5 qualification issues, but you had wrestled with them until there was only 1, which I think is a remarkable achievement, so to speak. And unfortunately, what it does raise a question about some of your colleagues who will stay in a department for 12 months, but at the end of the year, when accounting has to be done, they still can't account. I think it's a challenge that beyond the department has to be looked at within government in general. I felt that it said a lot about how some of our administrative cadres relate to their work. But anyway, be that as it may, or be that as it is, I would like to hand over to Comrade Mutambi to kickstart. Well, I'm very sure we'll have an early day today. Compared to the other time when we're in the department, it had 16 qualification issues. So we had a lot to talk about. But this time around, I can see we might have an early day. But let's get to it. Comrade Mutambi.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning once again. I'll start with the item on page 177, the issue of restatement of corresponding figures. If members and colleagues can peruse page 225, note 3. The AGS said, as disclosed in note 3 to the financial statement, the corresponding figures for year ending 31 March
have been restated as a result of error discussed during the current financial year. So I've taken number to page 225. What I want to know from the accounting officer, what have you done to ensure that this as stated in 225 does not recur in the current financial year? Secondly, same with page.
Can we maybe take just one question at a time, I think, so that we don't lose track of the issue? Yes, ma'am.
Honorable member, thank you very much for the question. The issue of the restatement of corresponding figures as indicated in the financial statements, as you've indicated, we have made a number of attempts to deal with this matter, and the errors which have been indicated by the Auditor General, starting with the area of compensation of employees, which was due really to refinement of the allocation of expenditure in these categories of SCOA as prescribed by National Treasury. It was done in collaboration with the Auditor General and National Treasury, and the amount spent had not been adjusted. The DOD in its Operation Clean Audit, which is Operation Clean Audit that has really assisted us in eliminating the qualifications, has made a concerted effort to disclose the value of accruals accurately and completely for the financial year 2009-10. To this effort, the comparative amounts for previous years were also addressed and corrected. The amount disclosed for goods and services was also adjusted from the 198 million to the 256 million. The adjusted amount also provides more accurate value for the accruals in the financial year 2008-2009, and the value of the accruals as disclosed in the financial statements of 2009-10 was thus not qualified for both disclosed financial years. These matters that have been raised by the Auditor General in the report have also required us to deal with the corresponding figures in other areas, such as that is contained in Note 18, on payables current, on contingent liabilities, and on the lease commitments and irregular expenditure and receivables on departmental revenue, which basically constitute all of the areas of previous qualification in the previous year. So we continue to finalize and our systems and particularly ensure accuracy in the financial statements, and with the Operation Clean Audit, which will conclude its business in May of 2011, we are certain that we will leave behind a very thorough system which enables us to ensure that such errors do not occur again in the future. And that includes additional capacity, dedicated capacity to deal with issues of accuracy of information, and particularly paying particular attention to the matters of the financial statements as they are submitted.
My second question was going to be on 233. I'm glad that on accruals, but she has explained that. Then let me move to the next area. Tangible and intangible assets. Yet the chairperson has acknowledged that we have moved that this is one issue that has been a matter for a concern. He had received a qualified opinion on assets for the past four financial years. Yet one appreciates the interventions that the department has made thus far. But compliance with National Treasury disclosure requirements remains a challenge. And then I'm interested to know on the interventions that you've made,
December 2008, you appointed a consortium, that's KPMG and SABMT, to especially deal with the issue of asset management. And then, according to your report, you have indicated that they were given a 2-year contract. So one is interested on the impact. Was they really value for money? I want to know the progress in that regard.
Through you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Member, the area of asset management is really an area we think we have made significant progress. For the benefit of the committee, I would like to present a summary report that gives progress on what we've been able to do in the area of assets in order to respond to the challenge that has been raised, particularly on the non-disclosure of these items, to enable the Auditor General to proceed. Let me also indicate to the Honourable Member and Honourable Members present, firstly, that the scale of assets in the Department of Defence, to say the least, counts into the millions of items. We have, though, a very comprehensive plan to deal with this matter. And we have taken them in the three categories of tangible, movable, intangible, and tangible, immovable assets. And I will proceed to provide you with a progress report on each of those three categories. If we start with the area of movable assets, our approach, firstly, has been to deal with some of the areas that have been mentioned by the Auditor General. We have ensured that we are accelerating the classification of all the national stock numbers as either inventory and assets in terms of SCOA. In fact, what we've been able to achieve in this area is that all of our NSN numbers can now be translated into SCOA immediately. And that means that we are now compliant on our NSN numbers to the SCOA requirements. We also, which in response to our primary problem, are phasing out our old logistical systems. We are accelerating the implementation of what the system known as Calamis, and also are creating an awareness program throughout the department. We've also endeavored to finalize the unique identification and labeling of all of the assets, including the verification of acquisition data. Our approach in phase one of this program has been aimed primarily at targeting the high-value assets. And the high-value assets, which include military equipment, transportation and vehicles, and weapon systems. And that basically constitutes 80% of our asset base in the category of movable assets. In that area, we have made significant progress, and I can indicate the various categories. Chair, if you allow me. The indication...
It's in the document. Comrade will read it.
Okay. Yeah. But just to give you a sense, Chairperson, we have completed 100% of all the items in those categories of transportation, weapon systems, the most expensive items. 100% of aircraft, 100% of vessels in the Navy, 100% of all vehicles in the Navy, 100% of vehicles in the SAMs, 100% of weapons in the SAMs. We are at 88% of vehicles in the South African Air Force, 82% of weapons in the South African Air Force, 59% of weapons in the South African Navy. In the South African Army, I must indicate, we are 81% of all weapons and 44% of all vehicles. And the real issue about the South African Army is the asset base of the South African Army constitutes by far more than 50% of all our asset base in this area. We continue to make progress in this area, Chairperson, and we're quite convinced that we will be able to conclude this exercise whilst we continue to consult with the Chairperson. We think in about 12 to 18 months. We are discussing with the Accountant General.
Just help me to understand.
Yes.
You may need 12 to 18 months to complete a verification of vehicles in the airport, for example.
No, Chairperson, I'm not referring to the completion of this exercise alone. What we have been discussing with the Accountant General is that we need to be able to demonstrate stewardship of our assets. And the reporting framework includes six elements. One is to know where the assets are, to know how many they are, to know that where they can be located and be able to be found, to then be able to determine their original purchase price, and then finally to be able to determine their value currently. So all of those elements and those requirements have to be met, including the other elements. And what we've done so far, Chair, which is before you, is the issues of identification, location, and we have not yet concluded the issue of value determination.
So the 12 to 18 months relate to the totality of the elements that have to be factored in.
Yes, Chairperson, we are looking at that period to enable us to be able to conclude our work in relation to those. But that means at a particular point, together with the Accountant General and National Treasury, we would agree on what is available from us and with the Auditor General as well,
Can I just check on page 3?
Yes.
The table that is on page 3 and the percentages of success or where you are, this table, what does it relate to? Does it relate to location? Does it relate to identification?
It relates both to location and identification. It does not include the value issues yet.
Okay.
That's fine.
Let's go back to my original question. Where lies the challenge in being able to locate all the vehicles within the Air Force? And how long will it take for the department to be able to save the Air Force? We have so many vehicles. Because at this stage, only 88% disclosure.
Chairperson, in determining the vehicle for the South African Air Force and the count, which relates to those issues, we, in that 88%, were quite confident that we would be able to conclude that exercise in about 3 to 4 months, because they are making progress with respect to that. The issues possibly in the area of the location of those vehicles in various areas across the country. But
if you can assist me so that I'm at least on par with you. Where, at process level, where lies the bottleneck? Because I would assume you know, the Air Force physically is operating from 5, 7, or 15 areas, and in each there will be somebody in charge who should be able to say, this is what we have, this is what we have, and it becomes arithmetic. We have 500 cars or 400 cars. If it's purely at the level of disclosure, just saying, how many cars do we have? Where is the bottleneck? Just so that we must not be simplistic about it, and yet it's a very technical process.
Chairperson, if you would allow, can I request the Chief of Logistics to explain to you in detail exactly what those elements are that lead to the summary figure per base, per area, so that there's a fair understanding?
I thank you, Honourable Chair, members of the committee. If you can, I can take you through that document again so that I can bring you back to this document. That's right. So I take you back to the table. As you can see at the beginning, the problem statement had to do the AG could not verify existence, rights and obligations, completeness, and valuation with regard to a tangible and intangible asset. Now, with respect to these, on this particular table, coming to your question, we are saying for this particular financial year, this 10-11, we are going to fully disclose this particular asset with regards to all what the Auditor General has indicated. Now we're going to updating the document. The column 4 indicates the update. The system indicates, for instance, that there are 354 aircraft. Now the exercise which we have done in preparation for the Auditor General, we have located, confirmed the location of those aircraft. We have confirmed the rights and obligation in terms of who is owning them, the Air Force, and do we have the proper documentation? Yes, we have the proper documentation. Also, what we've attempted in part of those things is to establish the purchase price, the original purchase price on this one. Now, we're saying this has to do with the Note 33, the first two items. Those are the ones which we are saying confidently we are going to close in particular financially.
No, that's fine, officer. I think my question then goes to the second item. Aircraft, 100% happy. Second item, vehicles, is at 88%. I'm saying, can you assist us to appreciate what are the bottlenecks in achieving 100% in counting how many vehicles do we have in the Air Force?
The issue with air vehicles is that, as you can see, the number is 7,619. Now, in updating the information, we are supposed to confirm that the location and the documentation. Now, in some of the instances, it happens that some of the vehicles have been loaned to other units, and the documents are in the main unit, but they are not yet located. They might be in the other the units. So that's the 88 that we've done, the 88 was left 12% to confirm the rights and obligation, which is to ensure that where if they have been loaded to another unit, are they still there in that particular unit, and that's the confirmation we're busy with.
All right. That's fine. Comrade, as long as it's around this particular issue, Comrade Roy?
Arising from the questions you've
right.
been posing, but please
sure.
allow me to follow up also. In these elements that you indicated, surely location of these items is perhaps the easiest of the lot. You must surely give us the assurance that you know where all your aircraft carriers are, if you have any, where all your battleships are, where all your rifles are. So location of these elements, that is a given. You know, the documentation may be in another unit, but you're able to locate that particular item, 100%. Is that correct?
Not necessarily. What can happen is that the unit might loan a particular the aircraft is an easy item. The ones which are highly mobile or which are being taken from one unit to the other is the vehicles.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Let's use the vehicle as an example.
The vehicles. Now, one of the vehicles might happen that it has been loaned to Unit X from Cape Town to Unit X. And there is a document reflecting that it's in Unit X in Pretoria. Now, when it arrives in Pretoria, there might be a need, operational need, to redeploy the particular document. But in the original parent unit, it's reflected as it's in Pretoria. Now, during the process of updating the system, that's where the challenge might be in confirming whether it has gone to the second unit. That's the challenge we have. Or it might happen in other extreme cases that it has been reported as lost, but it's lost in that particular unit where it has been the loaned to, but not to the parent unit yet.
All right. Pretoria still on this very question. Yeah. Okay, Pretoria.
Thank you, Chair. My question relates to a comment made by the Secretary for Defence when she said that recollection is correct, that you said it would take 12 to 18 months for this whole process to be sorted out, to be corrected. I just want to understand it in my own mind. Does she refer to the same process which is referred to on page 146 of the annual report, where she says that the time to be taken by the for the asset register to be totally complete would be until 31 March 2013, which is about 2 years from now? Are we talking about the same process? If so, are you then saying that there's a little more light in the tunnel from at the time when this was written, when you were talking about further 3 years down the line? Because as it stands now, 31 March 2013, that might imply that you're looking for, you're looking at three further qualifications unless the problem is sorted out sooner.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, at the time at which the annual report was written, the operation team audit exercise had started, but we had not made significant progress in this area of assets. We indeed have a much more positive outlook now that we have started the exercise and now that we've embarked upon it, particularly with the progress that we're making in this area, but also in the consultation that we have with officers such as the Accountant General and the Auditor General around how to deal with the disclosure and how to deal with the difficult issues. At the time, for instance, of the writing of the annual report, we had not satisfactorily dealt with the issue of the moratorium on IFMS with Treasury. We now have resolved that issue with them and were quite clear about what elements would proceed and what elements which refer to the logistics environment would actually be dealt with separately in order to take care of the special requirements in defense of codification. So we do have a much more positive outlook. We're hoping, in fact, 18 months is really what we're trying to do, but we do so in consultation with the Auditor General, and so that there is a point at which we can all be comfortable that what we would have achieved at the time is good enough for them to be able to audit, and then they can actually give us an opinion on what we're able to disclose at the time.
Okay, thanks.
Tim? Thank you, Chairperson. The percentages given here on page 3 might look quite encouraging, but the actual raw numbers fill me with gravest alarm. Air Force weapons, 4,000 odd. Unaccounted for. Navy weapons unaccounted for, 5,000 odd. That's 9,000 there. And Army weapons unaccounted for, 73,000. Plus 9 brings us up to 82,000 weapons that cannot be accurately accounted for in terms of where they are and under whose control or possession or use they are actually allocated in terms of a unit or an individual. Now, Chair, I would need some reassurance, please, that the Secretary, the Head of Logistics, are extremely perturbed about 82,000 unaccounted for weapons, and if we could have some time frame as to when and how they are going to track these down, locate them, and if they have disappeared, to actually then deal with that process, which must be part of the verification. And Chair, while I'm just talking, if I could, I know it's not part of the immediate question, but if, I don't know who it would answer, but if somebody could deal with the whole question of the depreciation policy at some stage in the presentation, I would be keen to hear that at a later stage.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I, through you, in response to the member, I'll ask the Chief of Logistics also to respond. In this particular instance, I think we're talking about progress of what we've been able to achieve through this exercise of confirming or reconfirming location as part of this particular intervention. I'm certain we are not implying that they are unaccounted for. We're suggesting that we have put through the paces of this audit, through Operation Clean Audit, this amount, and we're making progress in that respect. So we are confident, Chair,
that at the conclusion of this exercise would achieve 100% in each area and be able to demonstrate exactly what we've been able to achieve per category. So the difference between updated and total, I would suggest, does not imply unaccounted for. It just means we are in progress. Maybe you define it as work in progress in that category. Maybe this CDOC can indicate.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. In fact, let me put it in context. Again, you have to read that table in the context of the problem statement and what is required by the AG. Now, the AG for a particular item would like to know whether it exists. That means that it's there. The rights and obligations, and then the completeness, it means all the documentation is there. Now, that's all in one item. We have to complete all that process. Now, let's take for an aircraft. We might have an aircraft. It's there. We know it's there. But we don't have the documentation because maybe it was procured about 15 years ago. We don't have the complete documentation. We know it's there. But the AG, when they know it's there, they would like to know where's the supporting documentation. Now it will fall into the class of those which have not been completed. The other side, we have the documentation, but we have not located it. So it's a combination on those updates. The completeness means that we've done all what is required with regard to what the AG is required, but some of the areas, it's not that it's lost. It might be lost, we have to do that. If it's lost, we have to complete that process. But the updates here, we started, if I can refer you to page two, paragraph three, and that the main bullet three. The updates, the first time we started with the updates, the first iteration of the update was in November, and that percentage was very low. In some of the services, it was totally zero. And then in December 3rd, we had another a release of the updates, and that's where we are right now. This is the latest one in February. When I go back to Pretoria, there will be a new update with all the confirmation by the product system manager, which will improve on this particular district. Others will find that it will take some time because this must be viewed in an environment that we have systems which are not compliant. They don't help you in the management of assets. And we're doing this over the past, you know, the challenges which had later on you'll see that we have gained some ground in terms of closing the gap on the system shortcomings and what we're supposed to report on.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think one appreciates the holistic management of assets and the significant progress that has been made in this regard. There's just two questions. One is capacity, because you have a consortium and consultants doing this on behalf of the department. And I think the problem all along has been that there hasn't been in-house capacity. What kind of in-house capacity is being built within the department so that you don't have these consultants forever and ever, and I won't say amen.
Let's maybe allow Dambi to finish here, because then if it becomes a question about assets in general and not specific follow up on what she say, might actually be taking part of the time.
Can we have a specific one on assets then? The second one.
Yeah, no. Let me allow you to ask that specific question when she's done, because that's what she's supposed to be. All I want is that it should actually be a follow-up on what was
the specific question that Chair is following on what...
I'm saying let's do this. Let's
you wanted to finish it, you know.
And then I'll come back to you in case your question has not been asked.
I'm not sure whether... are you not going to put me in the same category as Steve? but nonetheless, I was having an interest, Chair, in this summary of respondents, which they are saying that they've complied almost constituted something like 88% of vehicles in the army. My interest here is, are they not having a system, okay, which will then help the AG to say if there is a document in base 4 and the vehicle is in base 14, they have no system to assure the AG that here are the documents that the vehicle is in a specific area. I guess also we may want the AG to comment on that. If it's that they indeed we've got the documents at a particular point where the vehicle is originally supposed to be. But at the time of the audit, the vehicle was in fast. Can they find a system that can, address this particular challenge? Because it looks like it's an historic, a perennial kind of a challenge. You can see in three consecutive years, it has been repaired as such. And if this is part of the excuse, then I'm sure we may want them to come very clear in that regard.
All right.
Chairperson, one of the important elements of our strategy to deal with assets is the issue of updating our system. And what we have indicated in our documents is also that we are now migrating into the systems that are compliant with National Treasury regulations, a system called OSIS and CALAMIS, which basically are GIAMA compliant and allow us to be able to establish the asset register and allow for the interoperability, which the member is referring to, so that the information can be much more easily accessed. What we describe in our problem statement is that the original systems that existed in our environment were systems that did not allow for that easy migration from one area to the other, and that is really part of the problem. That's the problem, that's the historical problem we have inherited, which requires us to then develop into one of the important pillars of the solution is the issue of getting onto the OSIS and the CALAMIS system, which then allow all of us to be able to first be treasury compliant, but also be able to put better use to the accessing of one system to the other and in relation to the various variables of custodianship. So maybe the Chief Logistics would like to go into detail if you wish.
I think it's fine. The historic problem, the issue, let's see how it's sorted out.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm listening with a very, very keen ear. And I have this question to say, do you have any unit in your department that deals necessarily with filing system, keeping your records, so that when documentation is needed, is found? And follow-up to the question is, would you wait for the Auditor General to come and find out that things are missing before you can address them? What are you doing in monitoring and leadership in the department to address the area?
Okay.
Chairperson, let me refer this question to the Chief of Logistics, because I'd like the question to be addressed with respect to assets specifically, which is a very complex area of unique systems for managing assets, unique arrangements for filing, and let me just ask the Chief of Logistics to describe that, because that almost operates separately from the rest of the department and other management systems that we have in place.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. On the issue of documentation, we have what we call product system managers. That is, for each and every complex system, there is a person assigned to manage in terms of the planning, coordination, monitoring throughout the life cycle of a particular data product. Now, we are looking at systems which are almost 15, 30 years old. Now, some of the requirements which are not within the systems which we have right now did not cater for what National Treasury or the PFMA right now requires. When it comes to the system of a document, the record keeping or safeguarding, that we have in place. But when it comes to movement of assets, you have to have a capable system. Hence, one of the requirements is the tracking system capability functionality within the system, which we don't have. Now, you find that when you deploy, this is another system-related problem, you must loan an asset to a system which is totally not computerized, which is totally manual. Now, you've got a challenge in the tracking of that document, because had you had a system which would be able to track the movement of that asset, you wouldn't be having the problem we're faced with right now. But when it comes again to the issue of documentation, yes, we do have a system in place for documentation, hence we're able, with that high percentage, of confirming of most of the existing assets in terms of the original values and the dates in which they were acquired.
Okay, all right. Tambi.
Thank you, Chair. On page 163, item 11.5.2.3, page 163, the last paragraph. As your last paragraph, 11.5.2.3, you got it. You made an acknowledgement that the lack of necessary skills and competence. That means, okay, there are situations where you'll agree with us that there are situations where you have personnel who are not aware of the requirement, treasury requirements, nor have the knowledge of asset management framework. I'm raising it, linking with it with regard to the above paragraph, the issue of the consortium. You see, if you go to the center page 162 on 11.3, 162, you have made a clear indication as to what is going, what has happened when, with regard to the issue of movable asset and inventory. It's very clear. But I'm concerned with your 11.5. Remember, I asked the question. You remember they were given a 2-year contract. I'm interested on the output. In your answers, I couldn't get that. That's number one. And then with regard to 5.2.3. Somewhere in your report, you indicated that you were in the process of appointing an internal auditor. I want you to take us on board. How far have you gone? Because some of the AG's findings was that the internal audit function was established, but it was not in operation throughout the year. Secondly, the internal audit didn't fulfill its obligations. So I want you to deal with that. Also, there have been vacant positions for more than 12 months, especially in senior management, and I believe they are also in relation to financial management. I want to also understand what have you done. So, other...
You see, comrade, I wouldn't want you to ask a multiplicity of questions.
But my worry is that you allow comrades
I won't allow
to
them.
Ask my question.
No, it's fine. I won't allow them. All right. Let's start with the... I think, Mutami, if I got you well, your issue here is about skill. And the second part will talk to the consortium that you have, to what extent are they assisting in capacitation, knowing that in most cases these people will come in and instead of helping to move out, create dependencies so there is continuous work to make money. So if it is not properly managed, they will be there for them. Okay. Please respond.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the operations field audit team has been with us, as the members indicate correctly. They are
term of office was meant to be at the end of December 2010. We have extended it selectively in certain of the areas where we were unable to conclude what was the intended output. So it's not a blanket extension. We've been very clear that certain of the output areas have been concluded. We've put them to bed. But there are a few areas around, particularly the assets area, where we still have a little bit of outstanding work. In their arrangements and our management of these consultants, we've been quite clear about the issues, one, of managing the outputs that they have delivered, Chairperson, so that they don't not deliver on their items and still extend their existence. They have fortnightly meetings with the CFO in the Operation Clean Audit Steering Committee, and they have monthly meetings with myself through what is called the Accountability Management Committee, and we monitor their progress very tightly. In fact, we are quite certain that in May we will see them exit the department, quite comfortable that we have in place the people in the positions that are required, adequately capacitated to take over their functions for them. In fact, currently they are working with those people in order to ensure, and they've been doing so for more than 12 months, in order to ensure that the person they leave behind is a person who's been working with them side by side. We've really not taken chances with this one, because our ability as a department to manage this issue ourselves is critically important. In addition to that, we have created the appropriate structures in this area of assets to take over the full asset management function. In the document that we circulated, we indicate to you the various positions that we've created, which include an asset manager, an inventory manager, a lease manager, and a central control register manager at corporate level, at service level, at divisional level, across the whole spectrum of the organization, so that we are certain that our capabilities are that we would manage this work ourselves. Chair, may I deal with the issue of the internal audit yes. function and no. ask the CFO maybe to just deal with the issues of the outputs, the specific outputs of Operation Clean Audit, which are what we manage on an ongoing basis. And then the vacant position in financial management, I'm sure he can deal with as well. The issue of the internal audit function, I think we, in our engagement with the Auditor General, and you'll see how it's worded in the annual report, the challenge in defense is that the military system establishes the responsibility of the Inspectorate General to perform functions, and has done so historically, to perform functions that are similar to what an internal auditor would be doing. So there exists, and has existed in the defense sector, an inspector general who conducts these kind of audits in the units and does some of the work. The problem which was identified by the auditor general is that the functions and the standards and the application of that system, which is military-based, is not exactly fully compliant with the standards prescribed by PFMA. So they've worded it in such a way that they say we are not fully compliant, but it's not like we have an absence of an internal audit function completely. We have part of the internal audit function, we just need the element. And we've agreed to filling this position, Chair. We are at interview stage, and we'd basically be finalizing the appointment of the chief internal auditor. In fact, we should have finalized the appointment of the general chief, but we're actually at interview stage. And we'll come back to you to confirm that this matter would be a closed matter. And that, in fact, with the combination of a chief internal auditor and an inspectorate okay. general, will have 150% of the capacity that is required.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think the outcome that is visible with regard to the operations in audit activities resulted in the removal of the of the qualifications. What we have done on a bi-weekly basis, we are monitoring all the areas. We've identified all the areas that have been. We have identified all the areas that have been areas of weakness and concern, and any new ones that may emerge from time to time, and we deal with them immediately, develop a plan. I think with regard to, for example, development of policies to address the key areas, we through that process we've been able to develop those. The teams went through throughout the country in various areas with roadshows to actually educate and train the people who are dealing with various aspects in the various financial offices in nationally. Certainly, I think the skills level differs depending on the area or the level of the office. And what we are doing is we are identifying what were the requirements for example, guidance with regard to dealing with issues. For asset disclosure, for interpretation of the information and the requirements of treasury, and that is an ongoing exercise. The areas, for example, such as the consultants that we're dealing with, that used to where we were not reconciling records, we are monitoring that, and we are on top of it. We know that we will no longer have those kinds of problems. I think the second issue that was raised, I think in the finance division, for example, if we look at the vacancies, we have only got three high-level vacancies at the moment, which are about to be filled because people left us recently when I arrived. And we will be filling them before the end of March. But those areas are not the key areas. There are people already who are working in those areas. What one wants to be careful about is to make sure that the requirements for skilling those areas meet the demands of the job itself, because there shouldn't be any mismatch.
Okay.
There was a question on depreciation policy, if Chair
right.
can
okay. yeah, sure.
deal with it. Because in terms of the reporting requirements currently, the depreciation is not part of the requirements as such. However, in the discussions with National Treasury, Accountant General, we will be dealing with all of this because they are the overall authority on accounting policy across government. We've got a sense of what our assessment with regard to that. We look at the useful life of an asset. We would be making very concrete proposals with regard to dealing with that.
Okay, you want to talk to a second point? Yeah, I was just saying you said you'll be engaging with the National Treasury to try and come to some agreement. I thought that was enough.
Yeah.
But in the second point you want to talk to, yeah, you can continue.
I thought I had dealt with the
okay.
issues that
all right.
affected the
second
question.
Okay, now that's fine. Yes, comment.
Thank you, Chair.
Just a minute? Yeah.
Sorry, Chair. I'm not entirely satisfied with the answer about depreciation because I think there needs to be recognition that the assets that the DoD is managing are not the same as the normal governmental assets. Some of these are expected to have a much longer lifespan. Some of them will need a much higher level of maintenance over a much longer duration.
Correct.
So I would like some sort of appreciation that there is a special case here, and that when the discussions happen with the National Treasury, it will be on this basis.
All right. I'm sure it's a point that will be noted.
Thank you, Chair. Secretary for Defense, it's first a follow-up on what you've just said with regard to the internal dysfunction. Can you look at page 178?
I hope that's not a similar form.
178, got it. You see, public finance, non-compliance with laws and regulations, especially on the issue of the internal audit function, you have seen that. So, you see, you have reported in the accounting officer report that there were processes underway for the appointment of the chief internal auditor. But you see, what worries me is the report. I'm worried about their turnaround time. Does it take a year to actually really appoint a chief internal auditor? So it's an area of concern, but like you said, I think you need to, because that's the other major problem. Hence, you are seated with this problem. I think issues of appointment, they just need to be expedited. You don't need 12 months to appoint the chief internal auditor. Okay.
All right, coming that back. Will be appointed in March. Fine. Yeah, let's move to the next.
Okay. It's with regard to performance management system. It's reported that some members of the SMS did not sign the performance agreement. How do you happen to find yourself in such situation, and then how do you measure performance if the performance contract are provided to certain individuals, others don't get performance agreements? That's the issue that I want you to deal
all right
with.
Okay.
Honorable Chairperson, the issue of performance management systems, including the signing of performance management contracts, I was attempting to get a direct response on exactly how many are outstanding, which are some. I'm certain that we'd be able to provide you with that information in writing and the specific reasons as to the non-signing of performance agreements. There are a number of areas in defense which may possibly contribute, but I would think including issues of security clearance. Now, we seem to sometimes have a problem, which is the rate at which we're able to obtain security clearances for SMS members. So if somebody may be appointed in a particular position, and we would start the process, there's a preliminary security clearance that is provided, and then there's the comprehensive one that is done on a particular member. In certain instances, that does not take a short time, so particularly for new appointments. But I'm certain that we can come back to the Honorable Member with the detail around the SMS members and the performance contracts that are assigned. But in my presence in defense, for instance, I have signed several of these, particularly with the DDG level posts, and the issue may well reside at the level between, because SMS members sign their contracts in a cascading way between Chief Director and DDG, between Director and Chief Director, and we may be able to come back to you with a full comprehensive assessment of that in writing.
So are you not, you want to follow up on it? Yeah, no, I'm not getting a clear sense of having your hands fully in the handle in terms of doing your part at your level and having a sense that those below your level are also doing their part. And secondly, I don't know whether it's a policy that emanates from the department or if it's not from the department that you would appoint a person, and after appointing, then do a comprehensive security clearance that would enable, that will inhibit the department from being able to sign a performance agreement with an officer or a senior manager. How logical is this arrangement? And or is it still prevailing? Or how do you intend to deal with that so that you are able to have a situation that is normalized, that people can have performance.
Chairperson, in relation to the entire environment, maybe this is just the uniqueness of defense. There are two elements to the defense department. Firstly, it's the SANDF, which has prescriptions around how the military, even at that level, manages that process. What I was referring to directly is the issue of the Secretariat, and that's why I propose I preface my response by requesting that we're able to come back to you in writing and give you the full figures, because we must give you the entire organizational and totality of those numbers so that we're able to. But there are standards that are prescribed around security clearance where there is a preliminary, which is deemed adequate initially to determine whether a person can be appointed, before a detailed one is done, which is then done subsequently. At least on the Public Service Act side, you are also given 3 months between the time of the employment of the person and the conclusion of a performance agreement. So the performance agreement is not signed on the first day that they arrive. You have a latitude of 3 months during which you are able to complete that, and in that period also complete the work that you do around their security clearances, the detailed one. The initial one is the one that allows you to do the appointment, but the detailed one you're able to complete at a later stage. But Chair, if you allow, we'll give you the full comprehensive thing, including the military side and non.
That's okay. No, that's fine, but let's do it that way. Yes,
We just need the assurance from you, Secretary. In the past, there's been insufficient direct involvement by the accounting officers and the CFOs with regard to the issues of to address the risk associated with the disclosure and asset management. Are you in charge? It's a simple question that I'm asking. Can you assure us that as we go forward, we're going to see something different?
Chairperson, at least in what the annual report relates to as the weakness of leadership at the level of the Secretary for Defense and the Chief Financial Officer, I would like to confirm on behalf of myself and this Chief Financial Officer that we are here to make a difference. We've been specifically required to come and attempt to resolve this challenge. And we have made, we believe, significant progress in the areas where we've been able to make a mark. We've prioritized particular areas where we can resolve the problem, such as the qualifications, the difficult area of the assets, the establishment of management systems and policy, and we really make our best effort to use our collective experience in other areas of government to resolve this problem to the extent that normalizes, I would suggest, the performance of the department. You are assured of our commitment, and we believe we can continue to make significant progress and strides in this area. And that requires our full-time engagement in everything.
Okay. Now that's fine. Done. Comrade Roy and then Pretoria. Push. No. I'll allow you and then let's go to Pretoria. Once it's done, here's one item, then we'll allow everybody to come in.
Yeah, one straightforward, fairly simple item. If you turn the annual report, page 240. 241, 242, 43, 44, 45. The department does not disclose any financial information there at all. In fact, it's page after page of gaps. I wonder if you could give an explanation for that. I'm guessing it may be related to the value of your assets, if I'm not mistaken. That may be where the problem is, that you are not valuing your assets according to what the particular item costs, but according to the purchase price. And so therefore you don't have a correct value of your assets, and as a result, you're then not able to complete these tables and those pages that I've mentioned. But perhaps if you could just expand on that and give a reason why, in fact, these four or five pages of very important financial information for the current year and the prior year missing.
Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, that indeed is the case, and this is a practice we found was standard in defence in relation to the disclosure of this particular information that relates to assets. the primary problem is because of the area which I related to earlier, value determination, and the honourable members are absolutely correct. And I guess it has been the fear to disclose an amount that may be understated or overstated, because in fact it's only this exercise of Operation Clean Audit as we conclude it, and that's why we provided this table. As we conclude this exercise, we would have these figures full, because by then, in addition to the issue of location, rights, documentation, even the purchase price issues, we will then have determined the values which will enable us to be able to fill this. So, Chair, it's this 12 to 18 month period that helps us to resolve exactly this problem, so that we don't understate or overstate values, as my understanding as to the reason for this table not being filled.
Right. Okay. Pretorius, please, let's allow Pretorius to finish his one item. Then we can allow. Just note it down, please. Yeah. Just note it down. Okay.
Thank you very much. My focus area is irregular expenditure. Maybe at the start of all, we should just remind ourselves what we're talking about. PFMA says regular expenditure means expenditure other than unauthorized, incurred in contravention of, or that is not in accordance with the requirements of any applicable legislation, including this Act and State Tender Board Act, etc. So it refers to the breaking of laws, really. The finding was that although irregular expenditure is not a qualification in your report, it's still an emphasis of matter. It doesn't mean to say it's less important. It's very important. Misdemeanors, if I call it like that, and hopefully this will be sorted out in future. The AG refers to an amount of about R1 billion, which refers essentially to staff-related expenses, and he says that was due to proper approval processes not having been followed. Whereas, if I can refer the Secretary to Defence to her own words in her account, she says this qualification, and this is the broader qualification, not necessarily HR-related, relates to the incompleteness of irregular expenditure. I'm not sure what incompleteness of irregular expenditure means. And secondly, a lack of documentation to support them. So my first question to her, would she agree with the finding by the Auditor General that that the bulk of the amount, the R1 billion almost, is as a result of approval processes not having been followed? I'm referring specifically to page 236, where there's a breakdown of the irregular expenditure for the current year. The amount is just over R1 billion, and if you look at the last three amounts, housing allowance, military dispensation, and performance incentives, those three together give you an amount of R858 million. So, two questions. First of all, do you agree with the finding of the AG? And secondly, give us just a little bit more background about what happened there. Why is there such a huge amount of irregular expenditure referring to HR?
Honourable Chairperson, thanks to the Honourable Member for the question. Let me start by explaining the major contributors to irregular expenditure in the financial year 9-10. They relate to areas of the housing allowance, the military dispensation, and performance incentives. And they relate specifically to the requirement in Public Service Act for such matters to be authorized by the mandating committee, which mandating committee is led by the Department of Public Service and Administration. The primary reason, and I'll take them one at a time, for that was the lack of a mandating committee decision at the time of auditing on these matters, and because of a particular challenge. Firstly, the issue of housing allowance.
Particular challenge.
Yes, I'll explain.
Found,
to come back.
No, let me explain. Let's start with the military dispensation. In the military dispensation issue, there was a requirement for an increase of salaries to be paid, which matter should have been presented to the mandating committee. Several attempts were made to present this matter before the mandating committee for authorization, and subsequently the mandating committee, even after the effect, met and considered these matters and has actually condoned the amount. Firstly, the legislation is clear that the Minister of Defense must consult the Minister of Finance on this matter. And the Minister of Finance, after consideration of this matter, responded by saying, yes, you can proceed with implementation of the salary dispensation subject to mandating committee decision. And the matters were then presented to the mandating committee, and the real reason for this particular irregularity is, firstly, the decision that was taken for the salary increases to be effective and the requirement to get mandating committee endorsement, so to speak, of these particular matters at a late, and that happened at a later stage. Firstly, because of the postponement and of the matters of the mandating committee. Secondly, because of the issues that were on the agenda of the mandating committee. So there was actually a delay in getting mandating committee decision on this matter.
Has been condoned now.
It has, Chairperson. In November of 2010, all of those three matters have been condoned by mandating committee. They relate to the housing allowance.
I mean, you're talking about military personnel salary increment.
Yes, Chairperson.
That's the promotion of...
Chairperson, the little background to this is there was a requirement to start adjusting the military personnel salaries to that of subs, because the military personnel salaries had been stagnant for a while, whilst their counterparts in the security sector, as a police service, had actually adopted a new dispensation. But importantly also, with a number of developments in the defense sector, the defense amendment process, which would have led to a establishment of a different dispensation of the Defense Department outside of the public service, was in progress at the time. This recommendation was made to the minister by the Interim Defense Service Commission, which had started its work and had identified this particular challenge as a challenge that was an underlying one that was impacting on the morale of the soldiers and the issues that needed to be dealt with as a matter of urgency.
So, but you say this has now been condoned?
It has been condoned by the mandating committee. It's off our shelf.
Right.
In fact, that number has reduced quite significantly from that 1 billion to much less
that's
state.
Fine.
But you can provide.
You wanted to talk about the housing allowance?
Yes, the housing allowance, Chair, was also condoned by the mandating committee. It arises out of a interpretation of Resolution 1 of 207, where erroneously an amount was paid to, a housing allowance was paid to people occupying state property, in addition to those that were not occupying state property. We have had the amount condoned by the mandating committee, but in addition, we are making proposals for the recovery of those amounts, even though our approach to recovery, because it was actually an error of interpretation of Resolution 1 of 207, will be such that we're able to recover the amount over time and recoup those funds from the individuals who benefited from it.
Okay, thanks.
Tora,
thank you, Chair. Chair, can I just make one point? Is my understanding correct that there was a technical reason why the mandating committee couldn't meet in time to look at the request, but that a political decision was then taken to override that in a sense and to say, carry on, we'll correct it afterwards? Is that my understanding? Is that correct?
Chairperson, there's two levels to the mandating committee. There's a technical committee, which is director generals and officials, and then there's a political committee of ministers.
Who took the final decision to say carry on irrespective? Was that a political decision or a technical decision?
I would say it was. I'm not sure whether it.
If it's political, we need to know.
Well, the Minister of Finance in his letter says, I have no problem with this issue. Please proceed subject to the mandating committee decision. And then the engagements with the mandating committee start at officials level, and the engagement happens in a time, and there's clarity about this matter going to serve at the political level. But unfortunately, because of postponements of meeting, it doesn't quite serve before the year is done.
When it reached implementation time, there was still no decision.
Somebody
then took a decision to say, let's carry on irrespective. Who was that decision? Not
having been in the department specifically at that time, Chair, I'm not sure if I can point it to a particular person. Maybe I can find out from my colleagues.
What level of person would have taken the decision like that?
What level of person would have taken the decision? I think, Chair, let me just indicate the factors that may have contributed here. Before the Defence Amendment Act came into place, there was an existence of this commission. Which commission's responsibilities are similar to the Public Service Commission? It makes a recommendation and says these salaries must be increased.
That's fine.
So that's the strength of the commission's recommendation that resulted in the implementation.
That process is fine. Understand it. Once the commission has made the recommendation, in terms of what is explained, the mandating committee will then have to take the decision. But in the absence of that decision by the mandating committee, who said, well, let's implement nonetheless? I think that's his question. What will be the level of the person? Would it be the Secretary of Defense? Would it be the CFO? Would it be the minister? Who would it be? Because somebody must have said, go ahead. Where did the go-ahead come from? And I thought you were responding to it when you said, well, I'm not aware. Once, is there anybody who is aware?
Okay.
And I would imagine that in preparing for the hearing, looking at all the problem issues, you would have familiarized yourself with how did this come about? Who was there? Who could have said yes? Who could have said no? I think...
Chairperson, I think in order to be accurate to this commission, let me defer the question to Dr. Didoba, who was present in the department at the time. I'm familiar with the strength of the commission's recommendation and the strength of the commission saying this must go ahead, but I think she can confirm that.
Okay. Dr.
Thank you,
Chairperson.
Thank you, Secretary for Defense. I think this matter is coupled with a number of issues. One of the issues is the conditions that existed in the department
As long as at the end you say, this is the person who said, go ahead. Fine, you can give that to account. Otherwise, if you're not going to go there, it does not... Because I thought it's a very simple question so that we can proceed. That's why it's an irregular expenditure, because then instead of waiting for the mandating committee that could not meet, the department felt, well, let's proceed.
Okay. As I indicated, the conditions that existed in the department at the time, I think everybody remember the incident of 26th of August, 2009. So that was the condition that seriously, seriously impacted on the morale of the people in the department. So this Council on Defense...
See, with all respect, we're getting a long story. We need to...
The Council on Defense...
No, it's fine. Allow it. Yeah.
The Council on Defense, which is chaired by the Minister of Defense, and members are the Deputy Minister of Defense, the Secretary for Defense, and the Chief of South African National Defense Force, are the people that took the decision for us to implement this immediately, because this was within that crisis period in the department.
No, that's fine.
I assume we're not all in the Department of Defense. I assume the reference to the incident was the mutiny of soldiers. Was that what she's referring to?
No. That was a march, not a mutiny.
Well, it's a bit semantics, but let's call it a march.
No. It's not. Please.
Chair, okay, I will withdraw that and say it's a march.
Yeah.
Can I continue? There's a long list of the expenditure, and I'm not going to refer to each and every one. Chair, well, through you, I think it would be important for us to get a breakdown of, under each heading of actual irregular expenditure. For example, procurement processes not followed. There's a 10 million here. I'm pretty sure that's more than one incident. Not now, but later on as a document afterwards, to give us a full indication of breakdown of what really happened there and what are the figures involved. But let me refer to the A400 Airbus.
All right, can we note that the breakdown? Not now.
Yes, Chairperson, we would be able to provide a file on each and every one.
Thank you. Can I refer to the A400 Airbus amount? There's an amount of 22.6 million for the current year as irregular expenditure. But if you look at across the page to column 27.6, the amount is 37.927, which is under investigation. If I can then further refer you to page 274, at the bottom of the page, point 7.3, there's a breakdown of the irregular expenditure for the acquisition of the A400 aircraft. And the total outstanding irregular expenditure comes to 63.999. Now, I'm not quite sure how the three figures gel. Maybe somebody can explain that to us and then give us more details about what transpired here. Why do we have irregular expenditure in connection with the purchase or non-purchase of these aircraft?
Thank you, Chairperson. Okay. Chairperson, may I assist, and the CFO will join me on this one. The irregular expenditure that is listed on page 236, which refers to Airbus, is 22 million, which was incurred in that financial year. The one in page 237 relates to a compounded figure of the one in 2009 and previous irregular expenditure in 2008-2009, which is about 15. And that's how you arrive at 37.
Maybe 63 on page 274.
Okay, let me ask the CFO to explain the 63.
The 63. If you look at the.
Can we have your mic off?
If you look at the full table on page 63, sorry, on 274, you will see that there is a big amount that is transferred to debtors as recoverable because it is an amount determinable in terms of the actual contract with Airbus, which is now the amount that is being recovered. The other expenditure, both in the GDA, the General Defense Account.
Can you restart that explanation?
I'm saying if you see that
on page 274.
On page 274, right? There is an amount that is at the end of that schedule, an amount that is being transferred to debtor.
Which amount?
2.940, which is a big amount, which is about the capital. Capital regarding this
2940649. That's the amount you're talking about.
2.9 billion. Yes.
Is that amount being paid to the suppliers?
No. This amount is the amount is that is must be repaid by Airbus back to the government. Then what is the GDA account? Is they would, when we are dealing with these programs, there would be related expenditure for travel, for accommodation of people where the project is being developed. All of that because of the fact that the capital amount itself is irregular, then that is it is irregular by association to that.
Just to clarify, Chair, the CFO correctly points out the 63 is a capital subcontracting part of the capital that had started.
Yes.
before the project was cancelled, and it added to the 2.938 because it is on the capital side, and then the amount I was relating to 37 is on the operational side. That's what that 63 is. It's subcontracting arrangements on the capital side.
Before I step off from the F400 Airbus, can I ask my colleague to follow up?
No, you can ask him.
Okay, so then I will carry on to the next one, and hopefully you will allow general questions.
Yeah, no, I would. I'm just saying you can't say I want to hand over to somebody. Yes, continue.
Can I just carry on with the last item I want to refer to, and that is the AMG account. AMG account, it's a matter of a figure of 93 million. And I presume the same
on page 236.
236 in this column in the schedule. 93 million for the current year, and if you look to the other page, across the page, you would see it was 161 the prior year. So there's a combination in the prior year, and at least 93 years left now.
I think it would have made our lives very easy. If you see on page 237, on the 2008 or 2009 column, if the figures were there, then it would have been easier to just simple arithmetic and say, this is the figure you're adding to this, and then you get the total. I think that is what is compounding the issue. But continue.
My question, first of all, is to explain to us exactly what Aero Manpower Group did in the Defence Force. What was their mandate? And then if you refer to page 148, where the accounting officer refers to them, there's also reference that a board of inquiry was instituted after the...
Is it 148 or 248?
148.
148.
On top left, you would see that there's a reference to the Aero Manpower Group. And in the paragraph, it says, control measures regarding the expenditure and invoices were found to be deficient, and a board of inquiry was convened. And it says further corrective actions have been implemented. Now, so I presume it's three questions. First of all, what was the mandate of this group? What did the Board of Inquiry find? And what corrective steps were implemented? And
all right.
Did the corrective steps include disciplinary action?
All right, so the figures, how they define, and then the last part of the question arising from page 148.
We noted it after we finished the financials. If you recall, if you look at the 2 annual reports, the Treasury improved the reporting requirements in the 2010-11 beyond what was there in the previous year. And therefore, not all of those figures, for example, would have had corresponding figures from previous years. But I can note in the areas where we had recalculated the numbers to reflect what is in the irregular book. In the current year. So I think in future you will see those corresponding numbers where they exist in terms of those categories. So if you look at it, we reflect in 161, which is you can calculate back to the figures that were disclosed as irregular expenditure previously. I think I was just explaining the issue of the numbers. But I think as we move going forward, we will see that those numbers will now start to show.
Chairperson, through you. The Aero Manpower Group contract is an old contract that comes from 1964 and beyond in the South African Air Force to provide supplementary technical skills in the area of specialized skills in the Air Force. In 1986, a contract was signed. Which contract can best be described as an evergreen contract, which means a contract with no end, which doesn't have a termination date. And the existence of this contract is what has created the qualification on the AMG Group on the financials of DoD for some time now, until we were able to deal with the matter in 2000 and this particular annual report. One of the challenges with respect to this has been the keeping of records, receipts, and documentation related to expenditure of these members, primarily because the members are almost entrenched in the Air Force and providing a particular service. We found that documentation was not always kept with respect to this contract that it should have been. Our intervention, which allowed the Auditor General to actually remove the qualification last year, included the reconstruction of receipts and data and records in order for us to be able to have auditable figures for AMG account. And this intervention we did in the 3 months leading up to the conclusion of the report. The second we had to do is deal with the issue of the contract. What had been clear since 1986 is the Evergreen contract was considered as valid, because Evergreen contracts were actually signed during those times. There was nothing found to be wrong with that. And it was long before the days of Pearson Act. And indeed, what we did do is to start the process for finalization of a contract in order to ensure that a contract is in place for this particular, it's quite a critical service to the Air Force, but that a contract is in place to enable us to account properly and deal with the matters. That matter has largely been resolved. We've improved, particularly in the issues of the control measures, internal control within the Air Force, around dealing with their daily allowances, their accommodation, where they travel to, what expenditure they incur, et cetera, and all of those internal control systems have been put in place, which actually, and invoices that they incur, which would actually enable us now to be in a much better place around the management of the contract. We are in discussion with the South African Air Force, and they are here and they'll be able to add, around the issue of the long-term sustainability of keeping such an arrangement in place. And I think we're engaging and asking critical questions about the extent to which, whilst we recognize this is a critical service, but the need for the Air Force itself to build the necessary capacity or find ways in which this service is no longer going to be required in it, in the Air Force in the long term. So it's one of those historical problems, Chair, but we've done the best we can to eliminate it.
All right. Please, let's allow Pretoria to finish. Please. Pretoria?
I've covered the four main points I wanted to cover in order to have another bite at the cherry with general questions a little bit later.
That's very fine. But then let me then allow the other comrades to come up with any outstanding issues that they had. Chula.
Thank you, Chair. One would just want to appreciate the response by the Secretary on the AMG account, but as she right explained that it was an Evergreen contract which was entered in 1986, but we know that the 1963, but the Evergreen contract was renewed in that year.
Okay.
But one knows that the defense has got a history of long-serving members, even though it was entered in those years when the PFMA was not there. But now we have the PFMA. We just want to check, Secretary, that do you still have members available in the defense who are part of this, and what is it that you have tried to try and correct the measures? Because the PFMA is now there. I think we need to check. I just wanted to get the clarity on that one. Thank you.
I think that leads to the earlier question around there was a board of inquiry, what happened conclusive around that contract.
Thank you very much, Chair, and to the member for the question. The important issue about the Evergreen contract is that firstly, it was not prior to the introduction of PFMA found to be problematic to have Evergreen contracts, particularly in these kind of services. The Board of Inquiry that met,
which is Board of Inquiry Air Command 03 of 09, found that there was no member responsible who could be held liable for the transgressions that are indicated in the irregularity. And they recommended several corrective measures that should have been taken, including the establishment of a contract, a new contract, which is what I indicated was the intervention, and the requirement for the Air Force to comply to the legislative and regulatory framework. I think, Chair, that the challenge in this is primarily moving forward, we would ensure that this occurrence does not happen. But it's one of those cases where we would be able to clean historical challenges such as evergreen contracts that exist and ensure that it actually never happens.
Okay.
The Board of Inquiry is quite certain that this was an institutional practice prior to this period, and therefore no one person would have acted out of that institutional practice.
All right. Except that the PFMA has been long there before 2009. Means from the introduction of the PFMA, then the accounting officer then should then have looked at this contract as problematic. For it to have existed until 2009, it means that going back, the people who were in charge should have been held liable for having allowed an irregular situation to persist. But I suppose the important thing now is going forward, how this is managed.
Thank you, Chairperson. Two questions relating to pages 230 and 231, please. First of all, on page 230, paragraph 12.3, on other debtors, the item loss of state money has gone from 10 million to 13.7 million. Could the Secretary explain that increase and, as usual in front of Scopa, indicate what is being done to address or rectify that problem? And the second question, Chair, relates to the bank overdraft on page 231, which, while a relatively small percentage of a department whose annual vote is now 35 billion, nevertheless, this overdraft is increasing considerably from 572 million to 737 million. And I'd also like some explanation as to what the department is doing to bring their overdraft under control, because that must be costing a considerable amount in interest. And that, quite frankly, is a waste of resources.
Thank you, Honorable Steele. Just an observation as well. I think on page 236 and 37, when we're dealing with irregular expenditure, there is a line at the top that talks about disciplinary steps taken, criminal proceedings. There is no information. And even the way it is structured, you can easily miss it. So I think as part of disclosure information, it is helpful and correct that there should be an indication, because then it talks to the, in part to the issues that Honorable Steele has raised. If people do wrong and there are no measures being taken, or we have no sense of measures being taken, then things can only escalate. But let's talk to the two issues that he has raised.
Okay, if maybe just on this issue, we've done a comprehensive assessment of every item of irregular expenditure with an explanation of where a board of inquiry has been held, where disciplinary action has been taken on the broken down elements. So it would really be our pleasure to provide that with that information on every single instance when we provide the breakdown. May I ask Mr. Kabandu to the first question relates to loss of state money. Okay, and ask the CFO to respond. It's actually in the joint operations environment.
Thanks. So it is the, These are in a number of incidents. We can provide details with regard to each of those cases as we submit the information on the details on irregular expenditure. But just generally, I think we have found that defense, by the nature of the business, particularly in deployments in areas where the country's technologically still fall behind, we use these high levels of cash that ordinarily wants to make somebody concerned. And therefore, you are exposed to the risk of money being stolen, lost for various reasons. But the details for each of those cases can be provided. In all those cases, criminal...
Yeah, that's what I want to know. I want the details of the criminal prosecutions that have resulted.
Yes, the report will then provide in each case who was involved, what has happened, if cases are still going on. But there are people who have been arrested, for example, who went to prison with regard because of those kinds of things.
All right. Can we talk to the bank overdraft as well?
You will see in the financial statements, we do not have anything that is interest-charged. It's within the revenue fund. The reality of the situation is that as long as you continue to have...
Can you just...
it's historical?
Yeah, no. Just so that you don't lose anything you say. Just push the mic a little bit to the side.
You can still hear me. Okay, thank you. With regard to the bank overdraft, as you can see, the consolidated paymaster balance. The issue is that there are historical debts that remain relating to what would have been losses deficits in prior years, one of which relates to the unauthorized expenditure that remains unauthorized as a result of the, which is sitting in debtors. And once those are paid and we have received money, we'll then be in a position to start to reduce the bank overdraft. But that overdraft, I think our accounts, you need to read them in two parts. There's a part that deals with a special defense account, which has a huge cash balance. And then this one is a negative. And largely, the contributor to this one is the fact that we still remain with money that we should be refunding to the revenue fund in terms of the provisions of the CFMA now that are in place. And that process... We're picking up with Treasury. When I arrived, I was informed that the SCOPA was approached about it, and they were not in a position to authorize it at that stage. We have corresponded with Treasury with regard to finding mechanisms to actually address it within the prescripts of the law. But ideally, we are asking them to appropriate an amount so that we can deal with it and remove the bank overdraft.
When you say SCOPA was not in a position to approve, are you saying approve in terms of process or in terms of saying be given extra money?
In terms of the process that will then culminate into an appropriation.
Okay. Now actually I wanted to ask, is there anything you're doing with the unauthorized expenditure? I'm sure we are well disposed to processing it either way. So
okay.
Engage with National Treasury, they'll send us a note.
Thank you.
We'll only be too happy to have it processed. Honorable Mania, I hope I'm pronouncing it properly.
Thank you, Chen. Yes, you are pronouncing it properly.
All right.
I'd like to touch on two issues, the first being the Airbus A400M, which we've discussed, and the other is a project called Project Consolidated Suit. Let me deal with the Airbus A400M first. Now, the Chief Financial Officer referred to an amount being recovered, and if we look on page 274 of the annual report, we see that there's an amount of about 3 billion rand that needs to be recovered from Airbus. Now, last year, the chairperson of Arms Corps, Popo Molefe, said that the money would be recovered by December 2010. Last week, the Minister of Defense confirmed that, in fact, the 3 billion rand had not been recovered and is reported to have said the following: the driving force in our negotiations with Airbus has always been Arms Corps, so we have been working through Arms Corps. We finally resorted to asking Treasury to assist us in this matter, and therefore Treasury is communicating on behalf of the South African government with Airbus, and we hope to hear from them soon. And we have given them 12 to 18 months to pay back.
Let's go to the question. Yeah.
So the question then is, why is the lead department now not Arms Corps, but the Treasury in the negotiations? That's the first question. The second question is, why has the 3 billion rand not been recovered? Because it sounds to me, and I would like the assurance from the Secretary General, that we are not dealing with a 3 billion rand bungle by Arms Corps.
All right. I think it's, as long as you're going to ask the question and point it, yes, go ahead.
Can I move on to Project Consolidated Fruit?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying just go direct to the question, yeah.
Chair, in looking over the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence's reports...
Let's do this. Does it reflect from this report? Because if it doesn't, then maybe let's deal with it in the portfolio committee, so that we don't deal with anything and everything that relates to defense, but restrict ourselves to the annual report.
Chair, if you'd like me to motivate, this is an important matter.
I understand you. All I wanted is confirmation that it's part of the annual report. If it is, no problem. But if it's not, I'm just saying there are many things around the department that we can talk to. But maybe in this particular instance, let's restrict ourselves to what is in the annual report.
Chair, the question is, I can find no direct reference to it in the annual report, and that is actually the problem. Because in the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence report, this is, and I quote, a sensitive project in defense intelligence with potential serious financial implications for the Department of Defense.
No, that's fine. I think let's leave it at that. I'm sure it is something that will need to be handled elsewhere, not here. I think maybe Comrade Minister, just note it, we can talk to it at the end, but I think all I would, and of course if you feel you can talk to it, no problem, but at least in terms of process at our level, let's just keep to what we have here, so that the
question, Comrade Chair,
sure,
procedurally, is SCOPA dealing with issues of the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence in this particular forum?
Not at all.
Thank you.
Not at all. Secretary of Defense, can you deal with the first question that relates to EBA?
Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much. The matter of the A400M recovery of the amount that was paid to Airbus is indeed
I think
led by Arms Corps.
Yeah, I think Secretary, the substantive element around it is around time frame. Where are we in the processes of negotiations?
Yes.
Are we making headway? That's where it is.
Okay. Chairperson, we are making progress on the recovery of the amount. Arms Corps has been leading, but Arms Corps also requires a mandate from National Treasury to settle on the repayment arrangements, because Arms Corps alone cannot, on the behalf of the South African government, agree to a particular repayment schedule. And this is absolutely critical and necessary as soon as it was determined that we're not going to get the money back from Airbus within 30 days as the contract requires. So effectively, the mandate of National Treasury to agree on the terms was necessary, and the Minister correctly points to Treasury facilitating that mandate so that AMCO can go and negotiate the finalization. Mm-hmm. And that's really the responsibility of Treasury to do.
All right.
Where it involves state funds, which AMCO can do.
All right, let me check from the Auditor General. I'll come to you seeing and then come this way, and then we see how we conclude it.
Honourable Chair, if I may just inform the SCOPA and also the Honourable Members present that the issues relating to the Special Defence defense account of 2 years ago, Project Fruit was referred to the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence and was subsequently dealt with by that committee. And that matter was finalized. So if there are matters which relate to the sensitive areas of the Defense Force, such as SDA, those matters were referred by this committee to the Joint Standing Committee for further evaluation and questioning of those concerns. And Mr. Guerre is fully aware of those proceedings, as he was chair of the committee at the time. All right. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I know early on the Secretary did indicate you're going to give us a list of all these incidences of irregular and fruitless. But if you look on page 237, there are some fruitless and wasteful that have been listed. My one question is, do you have an approved fraud prevention plan in the department? And if so, when it has been approved? And secondly, I mean, if you have any details on this flight cancellation fee for an external mission of $5.4 million, I mean, that's a lot of money. I don't know if you have the details there. And then whether anybody's going to be held liable for this fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And then my second question, Chair, relates to the compensative and circumstantial on page 225. Note 3.1, where you find an amount of...
225,
3.1, under salaries and wages.
All right.
I know there's something referred to incorrect classification, but there's almost a billion right here. That's compensative and circumstantial salaries and wages. On page 225.
Yeah. 3.1.
Salaries and wages.
Okay.
Item 4.
Compensative or circumstantial?
Yeah.
All right.
Then and then also I see there's some unclaimed salaries. It's only 11 million, but I mean, how is it that salary is unclaimed? Note 18.2, Secretary.
18.2,
yeah.
Next page.
18.2 is 231. Not a lot of money for Mr. Ainsley.
All right.
So if you can just... and then the last one is the leave commitments, page 234.
Okay.
Note 24. Because I see, you know, it rises. And I don't know what the policy is with regard to leave taking. I know that you have to take leave within a certain period, but it's almost a billion run of kept leave commitments. Note 24 on page 234.
All right. Okay. Is that good, sir?
Thank you very much, Chair. May I start with the issue of the flight cancellation for external mission? And again, in the same way that we'll be able to provide detailed information for the irregular expenditure, we can provide the same information on incident by incident basis for the fruitless and wasteful expenditure.
Okay.
The issue relates to a flight cancellation in one of our external missions where instructions were issued for the flight to be cancelled, which was responsible for taking material to that foreign mission. And there was an issue of miscommunication specifically about whether the flight should be cancelled or not cancelled, and the issue was further investigated. But I'll also ask the Chief of Joint Operations to just give you the specifics on that. And it was just an error of communication, basically, that led to that, and measures have been taken to prevent that from happening in the future. The second issue that relates to unclaimed salary and the matter relating to leave entitlements and the increase thereof, may I ask Mr. Lavan?
Page 225.
231.
including the salary compensation.
If you look at the credit provisions, it may often happen that at times you take decisions not to pay a salary for various reasons. Sometimes you are investigating that somebody is coming, is somebody who may have gone. Who may not be responding or coming back, or who's gone a war, you do not have records that the person is actually going to have a formal leave application, sorry, approval that is required. Those kinds of provisions, then when salaries are kept and held, they're held back until those people are able to respond. But I will also look at the other details that may relate to that. But that's the kind of circumstance that an unclaimed salary may be recorded, because you might be liable to pay the salary to the member when they can prove that they were away for legitimate reasons. But that you can do later, because you have to withhold the money until the person you are certain that the person is still in employ, and you are going to go through the processes of disciplinary hearing if, for example, the person may have gone AWOL.
Do you have a sense of how long? I mean, we have a particular figure.
Yeah.
Is it for a period of 12 months, 24 months?
It would vary depending on a particular case.
I'm just thinking that in terms of that explanation,
yeah,
then surely you shouldn't have anything like unclaimed salary for 2 years or 3 years.
Yeah, but they may reflect different payments, different circumstances. Remember, we have a staff complement of close on 75,000 people, 77,000 people, and you may find that they don't relate to the same people, the two balances, just a comparative number of what would have been there. In some cases, for example, we have people in deployments, etc. So I'll provide full details of what the circumstances are when I can, but it's a whole list of circumstances, some of which may have been paid subsequently and after the year end. Then on that reclassification again, if you look at that reclassification, page note number 3. Previously these are the improvements that Treasury is effecting to try to account for various allowances, etc., and the salaries. If you look at the totals at the bottom have not changed. What has changed is where previously we allocated a type of expenditure under basic, we then reallocated and reclassified it to this compensative and circumstantial. These also are part of the allowances that are granted, and there are also a list of categories that make up that. It's a total of a whole list of types of.
This is a generic word that encompasses
the whole list of allocations. But we had to do now because of the requirements to remove anything that is not basic salary as strictly defined in terms of the labor and the HR environment. Those areas, then you reflect what is actually basic salary and then the other allowances. We reallocate, I think the major areas is between basic and this left and this account, compensative account. That's the major portion that was reallocated, and others are just smaller than that.
All right. On the leave question. Yeah.
Oh, kept leave.
That becomes a challenge when you have numerous questions.
Yeah.
And others get left out.
Yeah. Kept leave, Chair, started when government introduced the policy whereby leave could not be accumulated at infinitum. If you remember previously, people could retire with like 400 days and get a lot of lump sum. And I think around about 2000, 2001, there was a policy decision taken to effectively say this is a liability that the state does not know its limits and only realize it at the time when it has to pay, and therefore leave from that particular date backwards was based on negotiated settlements with labor, kept, I think, up to a maximum. I can't remember the actual amount, the actual number of days. That was kept, and it's got rules that are applicable to it. The reality is that it is a liability if you retire within the state and you have not taken it. But it could not be, people couldn't be forced to take that leave. It was based on a settlement, therefore kept. It's a provision that is shown so that we know what that possible liability for the state is with regard to that leave.
All right. Khush.
Thanks, Chairperson. Maybe I would request that I be clarified by what is appeared in 225 under salary and wages performance award, and then the page 236 performance incentives, and then lastly on page 37 performance incentives. What are the differences?
Yeah, just a minute, comrade. On page
225 and two performance award and 236 27.2 the last performance incentive on that particular category, and then the same in 27.6 the last one before other. What are the differences of the three overall? Maybe the two, because this one, the performance incentives look like to be the same, but performance awards are different from them.
Are we talking about different things, or basically we're talking about the same thing?
Different things.
Okay.
The one is classified as under irregular expenditure. It's part of that dispensation that that was explained later. The one on page 236, the heading there is 27.2 details of irregular expenditure currently, just a class of expenditure under that.
So what you have in 236 and 237, that's irregular expenditure.
236 and 237, they relate to irregular expenditure.
But then 225?
225 is then incentive. Payments that are made.
Thanks, yes, now that I understand that, so I can raise my question.
Okay.
If what is in 225, the 112579, and then 100 in the previous year, was what you paid to your members, what stick have you used? Because in both 2008, 2009, and 2010, you had a qualified opinion. What you know tool have you used to say they deserve to get this money? I'm sure the 100 was paid for 2007, 2008, and 2009, 112. Do I have the understanding that you have? Can you explain what stick did you use to measure the qualifications? Maybe, Chair, it should also be went to categorize the units that receive this award, so that we understand in terms of their performance, where were they in terms of, you know, whether did they qualify to have this award or what?
All right.
Page 102 gives a breakdown of that. Page 102. All right, maybe let's talk to performance management. Was it in place? Was it proper? Are you satisfied that explains and justifies all these as reflected on page 102? Because then the breakdown, that's what we have on page 102.
Sorry.
don't assist them. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the performance awards that we awarded in this particular instance were in the salary levels 1 to 12, largely. And they were on the basis of a performance management system which is in the process of being developed and finalized, but were basically allocated. The performance management system allows for the department to arrive at a determination after assessment of the categories and the variation of the categories. And the payment was made in the specific categories that is indicated in this particular instance. But let me ask the chief of HR to deal with the detail of that, and because of an element that was across the board as a part of the report.
Thank you, Sarka, for the time. The department have a performance management policy in place which determines how performance incentives have to be paid. And this, it allows for three different categories to be paid in terms of the assessment. There's category one, category two, and category three. Category three, you will be between 95% and 100%. Category two?
No, that's fine. I think the question was, with that policy in place, was assessment done in a satisfactory way? Are you satisfied looking back that indeed we applied our policy in the best way possible?
Yes, we certainly did apply the policy in the best way that the policy requires us to do.
I see that out of the total of 74,000 thereabout, you found that 60,000 533 qualified for performance rewards. Well, we may have to see the police. That's very unusual in the few years that we've been dealing with the annual reports and looking at, you know, bonus incentives and all that. But that was the question.
Maybe can we request that they, this is not.
Yeah, continue.
I'm sure this table does not respond accurately to what we wanted to get it, because the question might be, did the CFO, for argument's sake, received any awards in that regard? And an example of that is because for the three consecutive years, the cause for the department to get qualified, you know, audit was based on assets, and then it's the responsibility of the CFO. Did he ever receive in those, you know, categories? That's why I'm saying, if they can say unit by unit, and to say senior professional high level 14, level 14 is a bush. You'll never know who's in the level 14.
Okay.
But if you know, they responded accurately, talk to the real issues, we'll be able to apply our mind whether they did apply to what the law requires them to do. I'm not sure whether that will make sense to you.
it does. But I think the table at the bottom of page 102, maybe you can talk to that, because the minister, the deputy minister and advisors, they did not get any. And then if you go to senior management service, band D, there was only one person. Who is that person? That hardworking person who... I think that's where the Congress is.
Chair, if I may assist, what the table indicates on the first column
is the total number of employees.
Sorry, my apologies.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. No.
It's not the people who receive.
They got, yeah.
The people who receive are contained in the service band A and B, as indicated there.
What band A and B?
It's basically your 1 to 12, salary level 1 to 12. I think that's what we're indicating here.
So your senior management, including your political leadership, not received any. Okay. All right. Matladi?
Are you certain? No, I've done with this portion.
I will come back to you.
Oh, okay.
I'll come back to you. Matladi?
Thank you, Chairperson.
Please, Tutorial, just note it so that we're able to. Yeah.
Chairperson, I'm on the irregular expenditure. The sum of 141.8 million, that was incurred because of failure to follow the procurement processes. Now my question is, why does the department fail to use the SC, the supply chain management SCM? It's a policy that is put on the table for you just to follow it, but it's not followed. And my next question is, who benefits from this irregularity? Because we have had incidents where people just ignore the law because they would like to run away with some couple million rand. And the last question on it is, who approves? People bring things that are not regular to you. They are not following the law, but you sign for them. So I would like to find out, Chair, this is a lot of money, 141 million. Somebody is accountable. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, we have two categories of irregular expenditure and two different processes for their condolence. On other matters, we seek the condonement of the National Treasury, particularly the ones that we've referred to of the big amounts of HR. In the rest, indeed, we would deal with the supply chain area, which is related to the procurement. We can provide the member with the full schedule of all of the irregular expenditure that relates to the procurement environment and the progress we have made with respect to the condonement of the amount that relates to procurement.
I think she's more interested in the progress you've made to prevent.
Yes, I'm coming to
that.
That's
happening.
And the second thing that we do is we provide information that relates to the transgression, because the condonement deals with the financial side. The transgression and the measures that have been taken against the individual that is responsible for that irregular expenditure. We deal with these matters in two ways. On the military side, we institute board of inquiries, which determine the party that is responsible and the action that should have been taken. And the progress on the condonement of the
action that should have been taken or should be taken?
That should be taken. So my apologies.
Sure.
In every particular case. And investigations on the secretariat side that should also that happen in order to deal with a particular matter in every year. The total amount that was condoned, for instance, in the financial year refers to 24 million.
Maybe let's talk more. What progress has been made to ensure that we don't have a recurrence?
Okay, Chair. We have instituted a process of monitoring the issue of condonement, because the first issue is about condonement of the amounts that have been incurred in irregular expenditure, but we've also established a mechanism around the issue of financial authority.
But I'm sure that without an internal audit function, and does this not reflect on the deficiencies in the working of the Inspector General?
Partly it does, Chairperson, but the Inspector General brings the case to our attention where he's able to pick them up.
Actually, your officer commanding or your senior managers, I mean the people who should be managing, monitoring and supervising and ensuring that the policies in place are followed.
Yes, sir. The process in procurement includes the process of condonement. And part of the challenge, because of the cases that we deal with, is providing sufficient information to facilitate condonement. Then there is a second area which relates to the issue of financial authorities and government orders, where in effect the payment should not have been made in the first place because of either a financial authority and the government order was not obtained. And under those circumstances, we institute disciplinary proceedings against the people that are responsible, so that in fact you prevent any recurrence of that irregularity. The schedule that we have, we keep monitoring the impact of the condonements and the disciplinary measures that are taken against particular individuals, so that in fact we are able to show in each particular case that this matter has been closed, this matter has been condoned. There is a further 17 million to what is indicated in the financial statements of 24 million that has since been condoned in this financial year,
right.
And we've made progress significantly
that's fine. I think the fundamental concern that she has, which we always have, is that when processes are not followed, the possibility exists that those who did not follow processes did so because there was a conscious and a deliberate attempt to advantage someone. Because had you followed processes, maybe a different outcome in the tendering process might have happened. So it is not so much the extent to which condonement happens thereafter, but it's the extent to which we're able to close the gaps so that the policies that are in place are followed. Again.
Thank you very much. As Honorable Magdalene was talking, what I actually heard is that she wanted to know who those people are. Who are those people? And maybe if the department can furnish us with a list of the people who were charged, and if there are those who were to repay our money back, those also we need to see on the public. And if there are still those who are waiting to be charged by the courts, that's what we would like to have. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, I think you had made that commitment.
And disaggregated to a case by case individual board of inquiry by board of inquiry.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. I wanted to talk to the issue of condonement. The Secretary said in the past financial year, 24 million has been condoned. But here I see the condonement which hasn't been done for the 2008 and 9 page one. Page 237 of 4.5, which now has gone up to 10 million. Maybe we could also hear the view of the Treasury Chair. You know, I'm really passionate about condonement. To hear the Treasury, what is the progress so far in terms of the money which was supposed to be condoned, especially for the last financial year? The remaining one of 4.5 and which has gone up to 10.5 so that it doesn't recur again, because if there's no progress in the next year, it will be still the same issue.
Well,
there was a follow-up that I wanted to make that time, and you said you'll give me a chance. On the issue that you were asking concerning the contract that was signed in 1963, are there still other contracts besides that one that was signed in 1963 and are still continuing to be paid?
All right. I think on the question of Comrade Shilwan, I think the first aspect to it will be whether there are figures that you have referred to National Treasury for condonement. If there are, then we can find out from National Treasury at what point are they in terms of processing. All right, let them respond to your question and Memangena, then I'll come back to you.
I think the ones that included, remember there is a purchase note that was issued by Treasury that outlines who authorizes, who can condone. Effectively, the principle is that the authority that in the first place was the authority for approval can only be the authority for condonement. But there is then a step before you condone that needs to be followed, which include full investigation, establishment of liability, circumstances, corrective action, and all of those things. Now, the cases that were of the nature that went to Treasury, because the Minister of Finance was the authority that ought to have participated in the process of authority, have been accounted for by the Secretary for Defense, and all of them have been dealt with. The ones that are outstanding are internal condonements in terms of the delegation, because procurement is delegated.
Where are we in terms of those internal processes?
Yes, the Secretary did indicate the figures to date with regard to those. But all of them, the condonance take place after the authority that condones is satisfied that steps are taken to deal with the issue. But we can give the figures when we provide the details, because they are updated on a continuous basis.
And the Evergreen contract, do we have some more, or was that an isolated case?
Chair, as far as we do not have another Evergreen contract.
As far as you are aware.
As far as I am aware.
Okay. So let's keep fishing under the trees. Okay. Yeah, what's the second?
Chairperson, on the non-compliance with laws and regulations, the minister on the introductory said the office of the AG has seconded someone who deals with compliance to that effect to assist. But Chair, when you check to the other matters, there are a set number of acts which were not complied with. We just want to check, Chairperson, how are the corrective measures to this, so that we don't make laws and at the end of the day we don't comply. Yeah.
All right, I'm sure the minister can talk to that.
Okay.
But yes. The person was introduced when we started. He used to check compliance. Now he has to effect compliance. I'm sure we at a broad and generic level, I think the responses thus far have been seeking to say these are the processes we're making in these particular areas, but maybe specifically in relation to that aspect. Maybe the minister can talk to that when she has the opportunity. Comrade Roy?
Earlier on, Mr. Pretorius whispered to me that he was a member of the Air Force in those long ago days. So maybe he can explain and account for his evergreen contracts when he speaks to them. Now, Chair, I wanted to ask about debtors. About debtors on page 230. Page 230, the very first line there. Unauthorized expenditure not approved by Parliament. And the Chair earlier on invited you to bring your unauthorized expenditure to this committee and we will consider approval. But we will not be a rubber stamp. We won't just say yes. As indicated there on that very first line, in fact, in both this financial year and the previous one, huge amounts, well over 467 million, have in fact not been approved by Parliament. My first question is, why is it that the amount listed under this financial year is exactly the same as the amount listed under last financial year? Is that a coincidence, or is that a technique of accountancy that I perhaps don't understand? Perhaps you can explain. Then what is the effect? You say that these are going to be written off. What is the effect of that on your books, first of all? And surely you don't take writing off very, very lightly. Have you gone to every extreme to attempt to recover these amounts, to discover where they are, and maybe break them down into individual responsibility? This person, this official was responsible for 10,000 rand unauthorized. Let's get the money back from him or her. And
finally, on that item, where could we in fact get a breakdown of that 467 million odd? It is a huge amount, which Parliament has said, and I expect with this committee, has said, no, we are not going to authorise that. Very serious step to say that, take that, to take.
All right, maybe still the sentence there should have been an authorized expenditure to be written off, not approved by Parliament. Because the last part seems to suggest a foregone conclusion. A determination is made of what we must do. But can we talk to that? The unauthorized expenditure, where are we with it? Why is it not? I assume, Comrade Troy, the reason the figure is the same is because there is no additional.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I think you can go back in time to pick up the origination of this. I think it's probably 6 or 7 years, or even more. I probably might have still been in Treasury at the time when it occurred. But we will provide full details with regard to it. The reason why it's not changing is because there's no other unauthorized expenditure that is being incurred throughout the year. It's the only one that remains unauthorized. And I think if I go through the old documents that I saw, there were motivations provided for its occurrence. It's got something to do with the time when we were 1994-97, what is that integration process? It related to salaries during the integration process that became over expenditure. Remember, in terms of the PFMA, the definition of unauthorized expenditure is when you overspend on the road. And at the time, because of those obligations that needed to be met, this occurred. It's like quite some time before, quite some time back. And I think there was a full motivation to Treasury, and then I think a motivation was then made to Parliament. That's how
What did Parliament do?
I think there was.
Can we just check on that?
I'll go back to the records, I think, but it remained uncondoned.
The point I'm trying to make is that if it came to us or to this committee, then it should have been processed. And if it's processed by Parliament, either of the two things, it's either Parliament said Treasury should make that money available to cover the shortfall, or Parliament would have said you need to make savings in the department. So if it says not approved by Parliament, I think
it
becomes a bit ambiguous.
But what I did when we became aware of it and its implication to the general balance sheet of the department, we initiated the process again to it being dealt with. But we will provide.
No, it's fine. Let me go to National Treasury. I'm sure they will have something to say. Just pull the mic towards you.
That's why I asked, what is the effect on the department? Because as I understand it, one of the options is for you to make savings or whatever, to meet that amount. Now, you must point out to us where indeed you've done that, number one. And number two, if the reason for those amounts being the same this year and last year, then why haven't the previous financial years been written off yet, if in fact you have permission to do that? When do you write off? Now well over a year, when do you write off?
Let's hear from National Treasury.
Thank you, Chair. I have with me resolution from the Standing Committee on Public Accounts for 2003. The report is 113 of 2003. Now, I think this debt originated in the 1997-98 financial year. And the committee, the Standing Committee said, the committee notes that Cabinet did not grant approval for the request for additional funds. The committee, therefore, is not prepared to authorize the amount. Now, when this happened, then you must go to Section 34 of the PFMA, which states very clear, when it's not authorized by Parliament, it's a first charge against your next year's budget or subsequent financial year budget. So you must find the money within your budget to cover this expenditure.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So I'm saying the sentence as it is, Secretary of Defense, might create an impression that Parliament is not processing, whereas we've processed. All that Parliament has said is make savings. And if that resolution of Parliament, said it was 2003, yeah, so 2003, almost 10 years ago, and it's like you have not been making savings to clear this. Because that's the only way it can come out of your annual report. There can be no resubmission to Parliament.
We intend to have serious engagements with Treasury given the pressures on the budget of defense.
We didn't increase last week. Okay, all right, Pretorius.
Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to ask a couple of questions, HR related, but. Can I just ask before I get that?
I've given you the opportunity to ask a question.
My question then will be, before I get to the HR, I want to refer to page 275.
All right, 275.
In the special defense account, there's a contingent liability of a possible claim against the state of an amount of almost 2 billion rand. That amount was 2.5 billion the year before, and it's come down slightly, if my interpretation is correct, probably because of the favorable exchange rate. And this claim will be defended in the civil court in Lisbon. And it relates to some form of commission that we pay to somebody somewhere. What are the details here? What commission is at stake here? And what's the current status of this?
Can you respond to that? I was just trying to find my balance, and I found it.
Chairperson, this particular issue is on the special defense account, and matters relating to the special defense account, as I would understand it. The Auditor General seems to suggest that it's a matter we can. I'm uncertain whether we can respond here on this, but can I suggest that we check that and come back to the member's question?
All right. Yeah, that's why I was trying to find my balance. I wanted to leave it to your discretion in terms of the substance of the issues. Otherwise, I think the substantive issues around the special defense account is always dealt with outside our committee.
Can I continue with my other question?
Your other question.
Thank you. Can I refer to page 109? I want to refer to misconduct and disciplinary hearings in the Defence Force. Now, I find the figure here of only 49 cases of misconduct quite astonishing.
You said page 109.
Page 109?
Yeah.
So I find the figure of only 49 cases of possible misconduct quite mind-boggling if you compare it with the total force strength, which is 77,000 people. Now, is my interpretation correct that these are the only matters which were dealt with last year as possible disciplinary cases in the total defense force? Because numbers like this you would probably expect in a department of 200 to 300 people. Especially if you look at dismissals, there were only 4 dismissals in the entire last year in the defense force. And if you read that with the comment on page 43, where under the sub-program Human Resource Support Services, it says the minister decisively dealt with soldiers that portrayed the SANDF military discipline in bad light by undertaking an illegal march in Pretoria last year. The minister ensured that those involved in the illegal march were subjected to the military disciplinary code. I don't see anything here which possibly relates to that specific incident, but maybe we can get a separate answer to what happened with that one. But just looking at the figures of 49 and only 4 dismissals in the Defence Force, proved my assumption wrong that this is way too low. Or disproved me, rather.
And with the full disclosure.
Chairperson, this particular schedule relates to the civilian component and not the military component.
Okay, that's fine. Where does one find the figures for the uniformed staff?
The military staff are normally governed by a board of inquiries, and that information is available in our legal section rather than in the HR.
It is reported on in the annual report. I haven't seen that, that's what I'm asking.
No.
Not reported on. Chair, that. That's very important information, which, if it's not in the annual report, it's a serious oversight. And we need to get that information as well.
All right. There are issues that relate to boards of inquiries that you will be providing to us,
yes,
when dealing with regular,
yes,
expenditures all and all those other stuff.
Yes,
sir.
Okay. All right, that's fine.
Mania? Thank you, Chair. I wanted to ask two follow-up questions. The Secretary of Defense explained in respect of the Airbus A400M why it is that the National Treasury have now become involved in the negotiation with the Airbus military. I understand that. But the question that you did not answer is, why is this negotiation now dragging on, and why do we expect it to drag on for another 18 months when indeed the expectation was that the transfer would have been made by December 2010? So that's the first follow-up. Chair, on this question of consolidated project fleet, there's clearly a project which went horribly wrong. Now, I'm not interested in the details of the project, but what I am interested in is, what was the project value? What went wrong? But more specifically, who was held accountable? That's the question. And I think that Scopa is entitled to know that information.
Yeah, let's deal with the first question. I will still, Honorable Mania, want to suggest that the issues which are aspects of your second question could still be appropriately dealt with at the appropriate level. So I'm sure that your concerns could still be entertained at that level. Not taking parts and taking bits here and bits there of the totality of the project. I don't think it will leave us any the wiser in terms of having a comprehensive sense of what was happening. So if you could bear with me, I would want to say let's deal with it in the appropriate structure. Let's respond to the first part, and then I'll give steel, and then we can look at how we then wind it down.
I haven't been replied to about the soldiers' march and the response to that. Maybe the minister will respond to that in the end.
Well, I suppose in the soldiers' march, in relation to your question, what you're looking for are the figures. How many were
looking for disciplinary figures?
Yeah. Okay. How many were disciplined? Okay. Well, that's fine. Let's talk to the first question of Honourable Mania.
Chairperson. The negotiations that are currently being held come as a result of the 30-day requirement not being met by Airbus. They have pleaded that they do not have the $3 billion on their account to pay back in a single check, and the negotiations are about a repayment schedule. So we're not going to delay the negotiations for another 12 months or to 18 months. The 12 to 18 months refers to a period of repayment, that is being negotiated, which is why National Treasury is involved in ascertaining that repayment period. And we will conclude, the AMSCO and National Treasury will conclude the settlement, which means an agreement on the repayment schedule, how long it's going to take them to repay. So we're not going to negotiate for another 18 months.
And yet, to follow up on that, Chair, I do not accept that Airbus, which must be one of the largest companies in the world, does not have 3 billion rand to repatriate to South Africa. It's impossible. What they're probably doing is negotiating with South Africa and withholding money deliberately. I mean, I just simply don't accept that Airbus can't come up with 3 billion rand.
No, that's fine. And you are probably right. It might be so, but I would imagine that in the process of engagement, if people say we don't have the money to give you in a single tranche. I would imagine you negotiate. And my little knowledge is that the people who have remained in that consortium, economically and politically, they punch way above us as a country. So I'm sure when you negotiate, some of those realities come to play in terms of how quickly, how seriously, and how responsive, you know, people become. So it's only good that, at least in principle, there is commitment to repay. Because when the whole thing came out, I think there was, we're not sure what was going to happen in terms of whether we'll get the money or not. So. But I'll give Steele and I'd like to give Steele, and then we'll bring this to a close. Unless we are going to have this one. Okay. Tim?
Thank you, Chair. I'm still intrigued by this unauthorized expenditure not approved by Parliament, subject to editorial changes. I know it's historical, but I wonder if there's anybody within the DOD that can actually supply the details of exactly what that project was and or project what actually caused that money to be incurred in the first place. But my second question does relate to the current accounts, and I'm intrigued to see that the DOD is engaged in what looks like a little bit of part-time forex trading. I don't know if they do this on their laptops in their lunch times or what they do, but there's a small amount of 5 million rand that was lost in operations of foreign exchange. I'm just intrigued to know what exactly they are doing to cause the 5 billion rand loss there.
All right. On the first aspect, Honorable Steele, I'm sure we may need to check on our files or go to National Treasury, where there will be this detailed explanation in terms of how that almost half a billion in authorized expenditure came about. I'm sure we can be able to get that. Maybe, Secretary, we could talk to the last part of his question, at least the 5 million. And then we'll have half a question from Pretoria, and then we'll be done. Please.
This is a multiplicity of transactions where we have incurred the foreign exchange losses, either at operations, because we deal with foreign currency in some cases when you deposit back into the revenue account the exchange rate at the time when the money was transferred would have changed, and therefore you would have incurred a loss as a result of that. in a number of transactions that we are engaged with in internationally. We are dealing, it's a big business transaction. It's a number of transactions that we can provide details of.
All right. Okay. Okay. Now, if you can provide details, that's fine. Because I wanted to say, I hear the explanation, but I'm struggling to understand how and why it should appear as a law, to say. But if there can be detailed explanations beyond here, I think that could still be fine. Pretorius?
Thank you, Chair. Just my last question on page 93, the HR-related question about overtime payable to specifically senior management of the Defence Force. I think we were told previously by other departments that senior managers, that is from director upwards, in other words, brigadier and upwards, would not qualify for overtime payment. But in this case, there was paid $1.2 million to senior management and another $18 million, so almost $20 million was paid last year in overtime to senior managers. Are there a different set of rules in the Defence Force that compared to the rest of the public service, or what is the background to that?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, in two categories, we account for senior managers who fall within the specialized groups, such as medical doctors at SAMS, because of the occupational specific dispensation. They are accounted for as senior managers and would necessarily be treated as such when, in fact, they do not constitute the SMS, the senior management service category. So we have a special category for specialized areas under the occupation specific dispensation, and particularly the medical doctors.
They're called the senior professionals.
Yes, but there are others in the occupation specific dispensation that are then accounted for as senior managers.
Right. Thank you very much, comrades. We would want to bring this engagement to a halt at this point. Comrade Chair, Negerum Tumultil Fetwak, Eor Lama Lamara, Hilor Onadije, Adwalela, Pilikifa, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The Chairperson, this meeting is your meeting. But since you invited the portfolio committee out, I'd like to express our heartfelt gratitude and gratefulness. And then I must say to you that this meeting or this exercise assisted us as a portfolio committee to have a better view of what kind of leadership we're going to deal with in the portfolio committee. A capable leadership indeed, Chairperson. But it is going to be easier for us as a portfolio committee. Unfortunately, it's going to be very tough and difficult for you as the leadership, because the greater the capacity, the greater the expectation from the portfolio committee. People do not have greater expectation from people who do not have capacity. And I will say to Comrade Minister, please boost the morale so that the portfolio committee must have it easier every time. Thank you, Chairman.
Okay, thanks, comrades. Well, I would like to hand over to the minister. I'm sure that you had all the engagements and the issues that you noted that you could better talk to, and maybe others that we missed that might be of interest to the committee in terms of better understanding where the department is at. Safe to say that I think the secretary, the report of the audit committee does emphasize the agency of having the internal audit unit in place from what they say. Comrade Minister, the department indeed has been a very challenging situation. Like I was saying, the time when we had the late Masilela secretary, the issues at hand were quite huge, and they have systematically been whittled down to where we now have only one issue. And we just want to add our weight in giving that last push so that we deal with that last element and then we're in the clear. I'll hand over to your comrade and she can then talk to her.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm very mindful of the fact that you've only given me 5 minutes.
Well, sometimes there is injury time.
I've listened very intently to the proceedings and the deliberations. I'm very satisfied with the answers that have been given by my team, and I'm satisfied too that they've responded interactively to all the issues that were raised. I'm hoping that perhaps you too are as satisfied as I am, and I'm hoping too that you too are as satisfied that we're dealing with the outstanding challenges that we have. I hope we've been able to assure you too that we've got everything that we can possibly do to put all of these past problems behind us. Chairperson, when you started off, I wasn't sure whether I would not be out of order. You did start off by saying there's great improvement, and then the voice went down and died out. I thought that would be the emphasis of NECA, that there has been great improvement. From 2006, when we had 16 qualifications, to now when we have one, I thought that we would have some kind of applause from SCOPA. It has been a very difficult road, but we are seeing the end of the light, and we are hoping that perhaps we can get more encouragement from ourselves, from yourselves, about the progress that we have registered so far. We put in place all of those mechanisms that need to be put in place, and we are indicating to you here and now that we shan't be here again. That's a promise, that's a threat. We're not coming back here again. There are a number of specific questions that were asked that I thought perhaps I could either emphasize or respond to. On the matter of the disciplinary cases around the soldiers, especially the ones who were involved in the illegal march last year, we have on special leave a number of 900 soldiers. And the reason why it is not recorded here is because it is a pending court case. And we have steered clear of those things that have legal implications, but that is the outstanding matter that would have been put on the table. We hope in the not-too-distant future we will bring it to yourselves. We are now on appeal against that case, which was heard in Johannesburg North by Judge Pretorius. We are appealing against it, and we will come back to you with a definitive answer on that matter. Chairperson, there was a question about who took the final decision to raise the salary of the Defence Force. And my poor team was ducking and diving, not knowing what to say. Chairperson, this was a decision taken by executive authorities in Cabinet on this matter. By the time the commission was put in place, which is a commission on defence, very often misinterpreted as a commission of inquiry, by the time it was put in place, Cabinet took a decision that an additional responsibility of dealing with the improvement of the salaries of the Defence Force will be part of their brief. So in fact, the space that they occupied was that of, we believe, ensuring that all the processes were put in place. By the time they made a recommendation, the in-principle decision had been taken in Cabinet, the in-principle decision had been taken at the COD, and in-principle decision had been taken at the mandating committee. What was outstanding was the finality of the figures that needed to have been agreed to. We assumed erroneously that this decision could be taken by the Minister of Finance. He said in terms of complete coverage, he suggests that perhaps the mandating committee should endorse this in-principle decision. And unfortunately, by the time that we closed books, the mandating committee had not met. It has condoned these expenses on the understanding that an in-principle decision had been taken by themselves and by the executive. So in answer to that, it was the executive authority, myself, and in Cabinet. There is another question that is asked about Airbus. The question is,
Why is it taking so long? It's exactly our question. I don't know how we can answer that question. We in terms of the contract that we have with Airbus, the money should have been paid out when the contract was terminated at a particular time, and we are haggling hard to make sure that we can get it back. We can't answer that question except to engage in conjecture, and I don't think that is very fruitful. But right now we are engaged on the matter. There's another question, Chairperson, that was asked about compliance. The reason why we have actually borrowed, and now we had initially wanted to borrow somebody from the Auditor General, but now have a full-time appointment possibility with Mr. Van Newton, is because I myself was concerned about the compliance issue. The Defence Force is a huge institution, and if we need to make sure that there is complete compliance, we needed to have an office. We now have an officer, and that office is assisted by two other people who will assist the compliance officer. And we will be able to respond to your concerns as SCOPA. Chairperson, there's one other item that I wanted to touch on. It is an item that was raised by Mr. Singh, who has now since left. It was the issue of the flights and cancellation of flights that amounted to 5 million. And I just wanted to touch on this because it is a topical issue. You know, by the very nature of our work, when we deploy outside, we're dependent on the conditions that we find there. We're dependent on overflight permits and et cetera, et cetera. I thought you'd start off, Chairperson, by congratulating the Defence Force for rescuing 40 people from Libya. And that when we have a cancellation or delay of the flight that we would have rented from Lanseria, it would be condoned by SCOPA. But this is the nature of the work that we do. We do not have airlift capacity. We would have rented this from other agencies, and depending on the situation, we would then have been able to proceed. As the case was in Libya, I think we were on the ground for about 14 hours before we could take off. That would be part of the additional cost that we have had to take on. But that is the nature of our work, and that is how we operate. Chairperson, I think that I'd like to thank at this particular time the exceptional support we've received from the Auditor General's office. They've been there ensuring that we understand every step of the way the problems that confront defense. I think we would not have arrived at this point had they not had lent a helping hand and encouraged us along the way. And I hope that together with them, we might be bringing to SCOPA perhaps a more definite way in which we can comply more fully with the requirements of the law. Defense forces the world over have a huge problem in ensuring that they comply adequately with what is put in place for otherwise different conditions and circumstances. Chairperson, I'd like to thank the SCOPA as well for the time that they've given us. And my team, I just want to say I'm very proud of them. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Well, thank you very much, Comrade Minister. I do want to say that I had hoped to say it last, that in my engagement with the Auditor General's office, you were very complimentary of the role that the Minister and the Secretary of Defense have played in ensuring that the department is where it is now. And I think it is something we'd like to encourage, because the tone is always set from the top. The minister and the accounting officer are firm on ensuring that things are done right, then they definitely will be done right. We are indeed happy that what at that point appeared to be insurmountable has actually been whittled down to just but one aspect. And when we engaged with the department briefly, sometime early last year, there were indeed a whole host of things. But when we planned for this hearing, actually our orientation then was that the department will be coming here to actually display how things can be done better, because it was not so much more about a whole host of things that are not right than how things have been managed, to a point where it's only almost about the single issue. So we also like to have an easy day where it is not about everything that is wrong. And I'm sure defense is quite a prominent department. Everybody has an interest in what happens in defense. So I suppose everybody has now a better sense of how things are being managed. Logistics, we're aware things have now been centralized, so they can be better monitoring and tracking. Establishment of internal audit, I think it further strengthens that monitoring ability, so that before the Auditor General even comes internally, you are able to deal with the issues. Comrades, thank you very much for your time. Auditor General, National Treasury, Prayalebo, and go.